Good afternoon and welcome to Midwest Beat. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. This is Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. This program is all about music, the people who make it. Today we are paying tribute to Buddy Holly. We did a little bit of that last week, but this is actually Buddy's birthday weekend. You see, tomorrow, September 7th, Buddy Holly would have turned 83 years old. That's right. Well, today in studio, I've got not one, not two, but three members of Rave On, a national tribute to Buddy Holly that's performing this weekend. Tonight, you'll find them at the Hobart Art Theater in downtown Hobart. Tomorrow, you will find them across the state line in Three Oaks, Michigan at the Acorn Theater. Before we get to talking, let's listen to Buddy Holly and let the music do the talking. Listen to me, Buddy Holly.
Closely to me. I told the stars, you're my only love. I want to love you tenderly. Those same bright stars in heaven above know now how sweet sweethearts can be. Listen to me, hear what I say.
Listen to me, Buddy Holly. Great song there, and joining me live in studio, the man who's been making a living by putting on the glasses and turning from Superman into Clark Kent, because it's the opposite, you know. You know, Clark Kent takes the glasses off and becomes Superman. Well, this guy does the opposite and becomes Buddy Holly. I'm talking about Kenny James. He's been on the show in the past, sometimes by phone, sometimes in person, and today we got him in the flesh. Kenny, welcome.
Thanks for having us back.
Now,
excited to be here.
You have brought a couple of the guys from the band with this
time.
Is a rare treat, so tell me who you brought with.
They have no choice. They're like, hey, man, come go with me. Where are we going? Oh, you'll find out when we get there. We have Dan Mendel, who's our drummer, who's been with us now for two and a half years. And the newest member, the puppy of the group, he's been with us now for about 4 or 5 months, and it's Rob Urbesti, originally here from Valpo.
Okay, where are you from now, Rob?
I'm down in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
Oh, so you've joined the gang.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Now, how long have you guys been in Pigeon Forge? Now, you've been there, Kenny, a long time. You were voted the number one Buddy Holly tribute artist in both Vegas and Pigeon Forge, as I understand. Now, how long have you been doing Pigeon Forge? You've got kind of a residency there.
Yeah, I went in 2000. I was out in Portland, Oregon. I was living out mm-hmm. there.
Which I wouldn't think is a Buddy Holly hub.
Well, you wouldn't think, but, you know, I met Buddy Knox there mm-hmm. and a guy named Jerry Lee Merritt, who was a guitar player for Gene Vincent. We did some stuff together. But I had a little guitar shop while I was there, and and I was doing shows, and I got a call or an email or one or the other. Hey, can you come down to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee for a weekend? And first question was, what's a Pigeon Forge? I didn't know. I didn't know what it was. Yeah. And they wanted me for the weekend, and before I left Oregon, they called me back. Hey, since you're coming for the weekend, can you come for a week? I'm like, yeah, I can move some stuff around, and I can make the week. And while I was out there the week, they asked me to stay another week. And that week turned into a month, and that month turned into, well, you know, 19 years now that
wow.
I've performed.
Wow, so you now live there.
Well, I live outside of there now. We live in Virginia right now, not too far from there. But I travel back from time to time. I haven't done any shows in the past couple years there because we're on the road. But our goal is to find a venue there to make home and just do the show there.
Well, Pigeon Forge, for listeners that may not realize it, is kind of like a Branson.
It is. It is. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's better than Branson. If you've ever been to both, you know what I mean. Branson has, it's spread out so much, and mm-hmm. it's very cool. I've worked there quite a bit. But if you don't know where you're going, you can really get lost. And they've got that one strip that they can't widen, so it's two lanes. Or in Pigeon Forge, they've got at least four lanes of traffic. Now they've built a new bypass and everything. You can get around everything, and it's a lot easier to get around down there. And I think it's a closer-knit community mm-hmm. with theaters and
Branson,
stuff there.
Branson, when I was there a couple of years ago, surprised me. I thought it'd be this, like, great entertainment town, and they literally like roll up the sidewalks at 9 p.m. The busiest place in town is the Applebee's on the outskirts.
Yeah, you're right.
I was shocked. We went to Gilly's, and you know, Mickey Gilly had donated some items for my animal fundraiser at Jim Stafford's Theater. We talked to Jim, and I met a couple of young artists there through Jim, and it was like very cool during the day, but at 9 o'clock, it was like boom. Everything shut down. Even the hotel bars shut down at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, in the summertime I was there, I think the Silver Dollar City, which is their version of a Dollywood. I think that's what mm-hmm. Dollywood was first, right? Silver Dollar City. They've got one out there, and you know, 10:30 at night, it's empty. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy. Now, is Pigeon Forge like that? Does it shut down at 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night?
You know, when I first started there, it did.
Okay.
Because there wasn't a lot to do other than go to a theater and go out to eat. And we wanted to go out after the show, we'd have to go to Gatlinburg, because Gatlinburg was like 5 miles up the road, and everything's open and shops and everything. And now it's changed pretty much to where it's busy all the time. We've got new restaurants. Now they've opened up where they can serve alcohol, and so all the bigger restaurants are coming in. And yeah, so it built up, in the past 5-6 years?
Oh, yeah, it does. And we get like 10 million visitors coming to the national park. See, they got to go through there to get to the park.
Okay.
So you get 10 million visitors, and so why not entertain them?
Why not? Yeah. So you're looking to get another residency back there and kind of stay put a little bit?
Yeah, I was at Memories Theater for 12 years, okay. And they had closed down, and they just recently had sold the property. It's kind of sad to see that happen, but, you know, there's Memories Theater had a lot of good memories for me because, mm-hmm. You know, I've got to work with some great people, including Charlie Hodge, you know.
Right, Elvis's guitar guy and scarf guy.
Yeah, great guy, man. He was awesome. I called him Uncle Charlie all the time because we were pretty tight. He's always pulling jokes on me, mm-hmm. just me. There's 20 people in the cast, and where's Kenny?
Well, you're going to be in town now. This is your second year of coming back here to do a Buddy Holly birthday celebration. It's becoming a tradition. And what can people expect when they come and see a Buddy Holly birthday celebration with Kenny James and Raven?
For people that go to concerts, it's a concert, but it's not really a concert.
Okay.
For people that don't go to the concert, it's a fun time that turns into a concert.
Okay, you're being very cryptic here.
it's just good old rock and roll at its best, at the best of our ability,
mm-hmm.
and I'm proud of my group. They're all great players, and we can pull anything off. And sometimes they get mad at me at the end because what song was that you threw in there? We didn't know it. You found it. You know,
wow.
It just depends. It's just I like the high energy of the audiences like that we're doing at the Hobart Arts and, mm-hmm. and up at, and Three Oaks. They're man, that they just get into it so much that it's hard not to have fun. If you come in and if you said, I'm going to buy a ticket, I'm going to come in there, but I'm not going to have fun, I bet you $20 you're going to walk out saying, boy, I had a good time.
Right, right. People certainly enjoyed it last year at both venues. There was a lot of dancing in the aisles, things like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, that happens some places we go. They just get up there. And if they don't, I come to them.
Yeah, that's right. I've seen you do that. I've seen you do that. Rob, being the new guy in the band, what's it like to team up with these crazy guys? And is this something that you were already doing, like a nostalgia-type show? Were you already in Pigeon Forge, or did you move down to join their camp?
No, this is a great opportunity for me. I was just in a lot of other different bands for the last 25 years, and as I moved around to different locations. But this is just such a high-energy show for me. It's a huge step up for me, and it's just a great opportunity. I'm really glad to be on board with these guys.
Okay.
Well, we're glad to have you.
And what is Kenny like as a band leader, as the focal point? You can be completely candid and
honest. Do I need to leave the room?
No, not at all.
Is he a slave driver? Does he crack the whip? I mean, how hard is it and how much time goes into the preparation? Because I've seen the show, and it's smooth. I mean, it rocks. It is unpredictable, but it is a fine-tuned machine.
It is, and Kenny's great to work with and play with, and the effort that goes into it is just great. I mean, just all of the guys really welcome me with open arms, and it's just been great. It's a great show, and I love the music too. I mean, mm-hmm. the music just is just phenomenal. I mean, you know, Buddy Holly, I love all that old rock and roll. So it's a great fit for me, and I think it's a great fit with the band.
You were mentioning other bands you'd played with for the last 25 years. Were they of this style, or were you more of a hard rocker, a country guy, a blues guy? What was your forte?
Pretty much all those genres. Okay. I started out working or living outside of Chicago, and played in some bands there several years ago. That's where I got my start, pretty much playing blues, and then classic rock. Moved out to Colorado in Boulder, and got into more alternative classic rock, and then also some country as well, too. And then moving to Tennessee, got into more of the country, and you know, still stayed with the classic rock, mm-hmm. you know, old rock and roll.
Now, when were you in Valpo?
Oh, that's where I grew up. I grew up in Crown Point, Valpo area, right in between, and
so you left a while ago then?
Oh, yeah, a long time. That's where I grew up. I mean, when I got started in playing about 25 years ago, in like around 1995 in Chicago, that's kind of when I started.
Wow. You know, this is the second band in like 3 weeks that I've had that have been from a place far from here in which most of the members grew up here, but they met far from here. I had the Stoney Curtis band in here from Las Vegas, and it turned out that all of them had grown up right here between the Illinois-Indiana border and Valparaiso, and they didn't know each other at all. They went out, did their own journeys to different cities, wound up in Vegas, formed a band, and now they're having success in multiple albums out there. So what do you think it is about this area that you guys have started here, but you left only to find each other and find success? Why could success, I don't want to say couldn't be found here, but why do you think you needed to leave to find the level of success that you guys have had?
Well, for me, what I was doing, I left Hessville and moved to Las Vegas because I knew that's where I needed to be to hone my craft, I guess, mm-hmm. you know, to really work on what I'm doing. And I've seen a lot of different tribute shows out there and picked up a lot of good pointers, not like stole anybody's act, just picked up pointers of what to do and what not to do. Because it's a little different when you're portraying or paying tribute to somebody else mm-hmm. and then rather just being myself up there, and it kind of gets a blurred line, but a lot of the basic you know, Tribute Artist 101 stuff is there. You know, okay. You know what I mean, as
right.
far as stage etiquette and different things like that. Except, you know, there. So, you know, it's very bad to come off the stage. Well, I'm guilty of that. That's, you know.
And why is that? Is that because as an entertainer who's portraying someone else gets closer, they may not resemble them as much? Because lighting, makeup, stage clothes,
exactly.
that has a lot to do with the feel of the show.
Yeah, that has a lot to do with it. And when the closer you get to people, they might think, well, he doesn't look anything like him. So that's, you know, why they say, yeah, stay in the lights, you know. Because it takes that mystique away, I guess,
okay.
or whatever it is.
But
to me,
it hasn't affected your show. In fact, it enhances when you go out there and you stand on tables and chairs and people start screaming and yelling and you're playing in their face. I mean, it adds a dimension of modern rock. And when I say modern, I mean like 70s rock. It's that bombastic kind of feel that one would not expect from Buddy Holly. Most of us know him from the clips we've seen where he stands there, smiles, and, you know, and plays his songs in his little tuxedo jacket.
And that's
you
because,
do a little of that,
well,
but
yeah.
the show is definitely not a boring show.
No, that all came about because it was at the same time Elvis was just getting really popular being on TV, and it was on Ed Sullivan. He was on the Dorsey Show, and, you know, he's shaking and moving, and, you know, people thought, oh, my gosh, what we can't have that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when Ed Sullivan made him stand still. So, but it come on after that, he pretty much did the same thing. Hey, we can't be gyrating or doing anything. In fact, if you watch the Buddy Holly clip where he's singing "Oh Boy,"
okay,
Ed Sullivan says to him before the taping, says, "We really like you. We like your songs and everything. But do me a favor, when you sing this song, don't scream." And Buddy's like, what? He goes, well, you scream in that one part, you know.
Don't scream.
So he sang.
Let the girls scream instead.
He sang at the top of his lungs, out of his throat, the whole song. Just,
wow.
Just to be like, I'm going to do what I want.
Well, let's play that one now. This is Buddy Holly, and Oh Boy, we'll be back with Dan, Kenny, and Rob right after this.
All of my love, all of my kissing, you don't know what you've been missing, oh boy. You're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The whole world can see that you were meant for me. Stars appear and the shadows are falling. You can hear my heart calling. A little bit of loving makes everything right. And I'm gonna see my baby tonight. All of my love, all of my kissing. You don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy.
When you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The whole world can see that you were meant for me. For me. You're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The whole world can see that you were meant for me. Stars appear and the shadows are falling. You can hear my heart calling. A little bit of loving makes everything right. I'm gonna see my baby tonight. All of my love, all of my kissing. You don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy.
When you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The whole world can see that you were meant.
Oh boy, it's Buddy Holly, and we're going to be hearing a lot of Buddy Holly music this weekend. It is Buddy's 83rd birthday anniversary, and well, Buddy's been gone a good many years, passed away at the age of 22 in a plane crash in Iowa. But the music continues to live on, so many different artists over the decades. from the country side to the rock side to the alternative side, have covered his music and kept it alive and well. And just it's a testimony to the longevity, the legacy, the quality of the music this guy put out in less than 2 years. Kenny James, who portrays Buddy Holly professionally and has for a number of years all over the country, is here along with Dan and Rob from Ravon, named after one of Buddy's songs that we will get to today. And they'll be performing tonight, 7:30, with the Spaniels Forever at Hobart Art Theater. And then tomorrow, it's all Buddy Holly music at the Acorn Theater. No special guests, and that's at Three Oaks, Michigan. And they've played this both of these venues last year as part of the first Buddy Holly birthday celebration we've brought to town, and this is the second annual. Let's talk a little bit about why Buddy Holly is still so important. Obviously, Elvis broke down a lot of barriers and gets all the credit, and he deservedly does earn some of that. But Buddy Holly, Little Richard, Chuck Berry, there were other architects of rock and roll. Buddy, of all of those I just mentioned, seems to be the one furthest down the totem pole. Lot of people don't realize how much he did. But besides that, we'll get into all the ground he broke. But why are his songs still so timeless that so many other people, you know, continue to record them and know them? New generations discover them all the time.
All the time. I remember a movie, Juno.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was songs in there they were playing from the soundtrack. Dearest, which is a very obscure Buddy song, but it's just folk singers pick up a lot of his songs. Mm-hmm. It fits everywhere. Of course, Waylon did a lot of his stuff throughout his whole career, and it just fit. It fits country. It fits folk. It fits the rock and roll. Look at the Stones, how they turned it up on That Fade Away.
Right, Not Fade Away. Yeah. Paul Anka wrote a couple of his songs. Mm-hmm. We had played Listen to Me, and you were mentioning off air that was an Everly song?
Well, that was one of them on the list of songs that Buddy had written with the Everly brothers in mind. And
now, did they reject it, or did he decide it's too good to give the guys?
Well, I don't know how it didn't work out. They may have, there might be some tapes somewhere hidden in some salt mine somewhere that's got, that they've recorded some of the stuff, and they did do some of the stuff, but a lot of these, they're just known as Buddy songs, you know.
Dan, what is your favorite Buddy Holly song at this time? And does it change? Does it evolve as you play more and more songs?
No, I think they're the same. There's probably not one favorite. I do like our three songs that we start with, and we start the same, we end the same with Ravon. Of course, people want Peggy Sue from when you start, but we make them wait.
Right.
We tease them a little in the middle, and they think it's coming, but he goes, they're not ready. And we
don't
make
do away
them
all
wait.
My tricks, man.
But I don't know. I like Heartbeat. I like Your True Love Ways, and that's an easy song for me. It's Brush is real soft, but it's just probably one of the more prettier songs. Mm-hmm. It's just
George Harrison covered that.
There's a lot of people.
Yeah, that was
it.
Yeah.
That's really a good one. I mean, if I here, let me listen that your True Love Ways.
That's
like
interesting.
That.
As a drummer, you're thinking, okay, the drummer's going to want something he can beat his brains out with, and you picked one of the softest songs, and you said play with brushes.
Brushes and nice and easy. It's a little ballad thing going on. It's just pretty. It's just good music.
Is there one song that's the hardest to play? That was a challenge to learn, or is everything pretty simple?
I wouldn't say they're simple. There are a lot of them alike.
Okay.
With the drum beats that, you know, like Peggy Sue, and then just typical 50s music, but there's a lot more tom work, like tom mm-hmm. work on a lot of their songs versus straight rhythm, I would say, you know. But then there's some, and you get in a few of them that has like the little shuffled jazz almost type.
You know, that's another thing, too, not to cut you off, but I am.
You're the boss.
That's another thing that Buddy was known for. You know, Johnny's known for that boom chicka boom, Johnny Cash. Mm-hmm. His drumming, Jerry Allison's drumming was rhythmic more than just keeping a beat.
Yeah.
I guess is the way to say it. And a lot of the stuff he did was I mean, they didn't have anything to go on. What am I going to put? How am I going to do a rock beat? Because they were rock. They were the first rock. So you just came and brought some jazz stuff in and different things. And kind of like Scotty Moore did with the guitar for Elvis, you know. But his drumming is I don't like to call Dan a drummer. He's a percussionist.
Okay.
Because he can do like Jerry Allison did. Take a box and start beating on it, and it sounds like a set of drums.
Rob, you were playing classic rock and blues, which is a complete different style of the kind we're talking about now. Back then, Cliff Gallup with the Blue Caps, Scotty Moore, as you mentioned, with Elvis, and, of course, Luther Perkins with Johnny Cash, all had that unique guitar style. Now, back in those days, guitar was becoming the lead instrument. Prior to that, in the early rock and roll, R&B era of rock and roll, the saxophone was the prominent instrument. Was the guitar playing back then, from someone who has played today's music, simplistic? Is that why it caught on so easy? Or is it more difficult to play those songs than we hear as a layman listening as a fan?
Well, I think a lot of that is a little bit more difficult than it sounds. I think
it does sound simple when you're listening. It's like, oh, dear, 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 dear. Okay, it's done. There's no solos per se, and you know that old Hendrix isms and things.
Right, and that's something that I've had to adjust to, because it's not just the straight rock and roll. Danny plays a lot on the percussion, and you sort of have to meld the guitar with the percussion and the vocals. And just, the whole energy. And, you know, Buddy Holly's songs, you know, for me, guitar-wise, they sound simple, but there's a lot of differences between a lot of the styles of the songs. You know, some are straight rock and roll. Some are more of a calypso but it isn't as simple as it sounds.
Mm-hmm. I just find that's interesting that so many guitar players have been so influenced by, you know, we always hear about Scotty Moore, but all of the guys that I just mentioned of that early era of rock and roll have left their fingerprints that so many people have copied. And, of course, Chuck Berry gets a lot of the credit, and rightfully so. He wrote a lot of the licks, like Bob Seger has said, you know, we've all stolen Chuck's licks.
Right.
But Cliff Gallup, one of my favorites, and talking to Jeff Beck last year briefly, he mentioned Cliff, and I know he did a tribute, Beck's Garage.
He's a big Gene Vincent fan, huge Gene Vincent. He owns his Falcon, his Gretsch Falcon guitar.
I didn't know that.
And the guy I mentioned earlier, Jerry Merritt, he has...
Now, Jerry played with Buddy.
Jerry played with
the Crickets.
Gene Vincent.
Oh, Gene Vincent, okay.
He split from the Blue Caps for a little bit and started his new group, but then they got back together, and Jerry was the guitar player along with them. He wrote the song She, She, Little Sheila, which is all you rockabilly fans out there know. And he had this old Fender amp. All the tweed was pulled off of it. We were in the studio, and he goes, that was Gene's amp. I said, no way. And look at it, and the schematics are like handwritten on the back and everything. And he said, Eddie played through it. It's me, Eddie Cochran.
Cochran.
He goes, I think Buddy used it too. They did a studio thing before I was with him. He's telling me all just nonchalantly. Well, one day I was over there. He gets a call, or I come in, and he's on the phone. He's on the phone for an hour and a half, and he finally comes in and says, man, what are you doing? We got things to do. And he said, I was just talking to Jeff Beck. He wants to buy this amp. I said, no kidding. He goes, yeah, I met him on – they did a tour the year before in the U.K., and the Blue Caps would go all the time. And he goes, yeah, Jeff just called me and wanted to see if I was ready to get rid of that amp.
Wow. This is very casual.
Yeah, right.
Lots of people, as I mentioned, have been covering Buddy. Stevie Nicks does not fade away. Last week or two, we played Maybe Baby by Pat Moynihan of Train. We're going to do one now that's actually been out for a while. And these guys actually made a bit of a name for themselves in rock and roll. You might remember the Beatles, who took their name in tribute to the Crickets, which was Buddy's band. And this is a solo take on Ringo doing Think It Over.
Okay.
Pretty little head. Are you sure? grows cold and old. Think it over and let me know. Think it over, but don't be slow. Just remember all the birds and bees go by two through life's mysteries. You think it over, you think it over. A lonely heart grows cold and old.
Think it over. Think about the impact Buddy Holly has had on music. Right there, Ringo Starr, another one that has been a mover and a shaker in the music business with John Paul and George, of course, covering. The Fray have done his songs. Jackson Browne, Lyle Lovett, Jeff Lynne of ELO, Linda Ronstadt, of course, made almost a mini career out of covering Buddy Holly. Just so many people have been influenced by it. Three of those guys influenced by Buddy Holly are in the studio today, members of Rave On, performing tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the Hobart Art Theater at 320 Main Street in downtown Hobart. Be sure to stop out there early because the Spaniels Forever, local vocal legends in the R&B and doo-wop Hall of Fame, will be opening the show. And that's at 7:30, classic doo-wop and R&B, which was a big influence on Buddy Holly. And
well, if you think about those,
the hiccuping was all part of that. Yeah. When you think about it, it was a black thing that he picked up from the doo-wop days.
Yeah, and this is cool to be able to work with the Spaniels again because it kind of puts that feel there because Buddy was touring with the black groups, you know, mm-hmm. Sam Cooke and Jackie Wilson and a bunch of them that the Coasters and the Drifters that. This is going to be, it's kind of
the Spaniels do a Coasters medley in their show. I shouldn't give that away.
It's
but
dynamite. It's awesome. Great. So I wish they could play with us all the time, you know.
we'll take them on the road.
Yeah, let's go.
But this will be fun. And what's the surprise? I mean, I don't want you to give the show away, but do you play just the hits? Or do you really dig some under the cover under the stone kind of Buddy Holly nuggets that nobody really knows.
We pull out songs sometimes that are lesser known. They're like, that was a Buddy Holly song? Well, it sounds like a Buddy Holly song. I guess it was a Buddy Holly song. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll do that. And sometimes I'll break in and do some somebody will always yell out La Bamba, which we don't do La Bamba.
A lot of people think that's a Buddy song because of the movie.
Probably. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. But sometimes we'll do Donna or Your Mine, you know, it's a little ballad stuff from.
Do you ever do Chantilly Lace in tribute to the bopper?
One time.
Why once?
Well, I'd love to do it all the time, mm-hmm. and we need to work that out, guys. Write that down. I was playing in Liberty, Texas.
Okay.
And we had a group open for us, and it was just not quite a year after Bopper Jr. passed away.
Which was when?
Thank you. It was August of 15.
Okay. Because I know it wasn't that long ago. I remember working with him at a show, had to be maybe 2010, 2009.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He had that leopard coat.
Yeah, his daddy's coat. Wore. Yeah, he... What a super, super cool dude. I miss him to this day, man. He's just really cool. And when he passed, I was in the middle of my last song, Rave On, and his son-in-law is a country singer, opened for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked and talked and talked about everything. And at the end of the show, I was doing Rave On, and I just broke in, Chantilly Lace got a pretty face. And the band's looking at me like, those are different chords. These guys weren't with me; they'd have killed me.
Wow!
But yeah, that was, I just, you know, I just, I was close to his home. Mm-hmm. He lived in Katy, Texas, which is about an hour and a half or so from Liberty. And you know, his daughter was there, and I just felt like Bopper was there, so I had to sing it for him, you know.
Wow, that's cool. You really should work that in.
We should. I mean, Bopper had a lot of cool songs that you should work in. White Lightning is a dynamite.
That's another good one. George Jones, everyone thinks it was a George song, but it was a Bopper song.
Yeah, Bopper
What was the other one?
Running Bear.
Running Bear, yeah, that Johnny Preston recorded.
You listen to Johnny Preston's version, and you hear the Oonga Chukkas in the background, and that's Big Bopper and George.
Wow. Yeah. Didn't know that. Yeah. You're just a treasure trove of knowledge and nuggets there.
I learned it all from Bopper. We can do a whole show on just the stuff I learned from Bopper about his dad.
Wow.
Really cool stuff.
Now, a lot of people, and I know we talked about it last time you were here, we kind of touched on it. Do you think that Ritchie Valens and Big Bopper would have been remembered if it hadn't been for the plane crash it took Buddy Holly? Was being in the company of Buddy at their death and dying the young death, you know, the old James Dean saying, die young and leave a good-looking corpse, do you think that had something to do with their legacy and the fact that, you know, La Bamba, the movie, came out and other things?
Yeah, and, you know, they were supposed to have started production in February of this year on the new Buddy Holly movie called Clear Lake. It was about that. And I haven't heard anything else about it since then. So
I have not even heard anything about
that. Oh, yeah. They were supposed to announce it at the Surf Ballroom at the last festival they had in February. Okay. But I haven't heard anything else about it.
Now, would that be about all three of them as opposed to just Buddy then?
Yeah, and how tragic that tour was all along, you know. I mean, they went through three buses. They lost their drummer to frostbite. You know, that last show, Ritchie Valens played the drums for the whole show, or for Buddy, and Buddy played the drums. He just had his glasses off, walked behind the drums, and was playing. You know, it was just a mess, you know, everything that went on.
What a way to go out. You know, you get all these hits, and you're such a star, and the last show you play is like falling apart, literally.
Yeah.
You know, chewing gum and Band-Aids kind of thing.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that say, hey, I've got an original concert poster from Clear Lake, Iowa, the day the music died. And I was, oh, that's very cool. But you know what? They didn't make concert posters for that concert.
I've seen posters advertised.
Well,
there were none.
But they had handbills that were made because it was added to the tour later. I mean, the tour was already set, and they put in a couple more dates here and there, so they didn't have posters for them. They just, you know, made whatever they could, how they printed them back.
The mimeograph machine back then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But, again, I mean, Ritchie Valens was the first Hispanic artist to top the charts with a Spanish-language song.
A rock and roll Spanish song, yeah.
I mean, that's landmark in itself. He opened the door for everybody that's come down. Now we have the whole Latin Grammys scene out there.
Yeah.
So he is the Elvis of the Latin world, if you think about it. But a lot of people, like you said, they say, oh, yeah, La Bamba, Buddy Holly. It's a shame that he doesn't get quite the acknowledgement that he earned.
I mean,
at what, 16?
16, 17.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, still in high school. And, I mean, he had a lot of good music to come out, what came from him.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of obscure stuff that I like listening to. He plays a version of Malaguena.
Okay.
That is very cool, you know. And he just did a lot of a Spanish rockabilly guy. I mean, figure that out. You know, it's kind of not what you would expect, you know, him being like the Eddie Cochran of California or something,
right.
You know. But, you know, it's hard to say people, you know, what would Jim Croce, if he not had died, what would happen? I don't know, but everything he did was great.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Bopper, he may have gone on to do more production. He was a radio guy, you know, and he
might have been the next Dick Clark.
He could have been.
I see him moving into TV. He has such vision. And as you mentioned last time you were here, he helped pioneer the video idea with the video jukeboxes. And
that was
way before his time.
Bopper Jr. showed me a bunch of things that his dad had handwritten. He had carried this briefcase around with some cool stuff in it, and he was drew a jukebox setting on a table. Each table in the diner had one, you know, and look at them everywhere you go now. They're like that, you know. Is Shoop still around? I
yeah.
When I was a kid, they had those.
And Al's Diner.
Al's Diner, yeah.
In Lansing. Yeah. I remember that. They had a jukebox at every table and a big Wurlitzer in the middle of the room.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he decided he wanted to figure out how to make a machine that could play movies at home,
mm-hmm.
you know. So
VCR.
Yeah, exactly. He was just – he was out there for that time. He was probably like Doc Brown from, you know – Back to the Future.
And right.
You might have thought he was kind of weirdo or something, but look at it now, you know?
Wow. Let's do another song. How about Heartbeat, which is 15, going back to the Buddy Holly disc here, Buddy's Greatest Hits. And this is a song that that you guys will probably be performing, I'm assuming.
We get a lot of requests for it.
Is it one that's normally in the set? Because this is kind of one of those obscure, more obscure ones.
It is, but it's... You got a whole different, like, dances, that calypso beat and everything, and it's a very cool song. Everybody seems to like it, and if we play a place, let's say we've played in the past a few times, and we go back and we play, and we don't play that song, people will remember, hey, you didn't play Heartbeat.
Do you get a lot of that? I mean, there's only so much time on stage.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we've got 23 songs here, and we're just touching on the Buddy Holly catalog.
Songs, so if we... did a show, it'd be a long
night. It'd be a weekend.
Yeah, right.
Wow. This is Heartbeat. This is Buddy Holly. We'll be back in just a few.
Heartbeat, why do you miss when my baby kisses me? Why does a love kiss stay in my memory? Little pat, I know that new love thrills me. I know that true love will be. Heartbeat, why do you miss when my baby kisses? Why do you skip when my baby's lips meet mine? Heartbeat, why do you flip, then give me a skip beat sign? Little pat and sing to me love story.
Heartbeat, another one of those Buddy Holly classics that you might not hear very often on the radio these days. Seems like everybody goes to Peggy Sue and That'll Be the Day, and maybe even Ray Vaughan. But Heartbeat, it's got a different flavor, different sound for Buddy Holly. Now, where in the hierarchy of his songs, where chronologically, would that song have fit? Was that early, later, mid-period?
I think it was more mid-period after, you know, he gets to New York and learns to do all these different things.
Did he move to New York?
He did.
From Lubbock?
Yeah, he lived there in Hell's Kitchen.
Okay. Why do you think the sound changed? Was it because he had a better studio? He had better musicians?
It could have been. When they were in Clovis, you know, he was trying to get all these different sounds that he couldn't get the right reverb or this. They had a room up in the attic of the studio that was just a room like this, but it was just tiled. And they had a speaker in there and a microphone.
Wow.
And they would flip it on and off. That's in Peggy Sue. You can hear it
You can hear the mic flipping on and off?
Yeah, on a good CD or a good album, you can hear the the tone change in there, and also his guitar, a Fender Stratocaster, for people that don't know a lot about guitars, it has three pickups, a neck, a mid, and a bridge, and there's a toggle switch. It's a five-way toggle switch. You can switch back and forth through those. Well, he was trying to get such a different sound that he had Nicky Sullivan, who was his second guitar player. A lot of people didn't know there was four band members. He had Nicky Sullivan studying on the floor in front of him, and as he's strumming his guitar, he's taking that toggle switch and moving it back and forth through the pickups to get that tone. That's stuff they had to do because they didn't have buttons. They didn't have pedals or buttons they could press. By the time he got to New York, he learned all this new stuff. He learned overdubbing from Les Paul, and he brought string instruments in to rock and roll, which first guy to ever do that. And they're like, right. Is this going to work? He said, well, let's find out.
What was the first song he did that at?
I think it might have been True Love Ways, but the other, Raining in My Heart, he did a lot of that in that song as well.
Okay. We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. What prompted the strings? Do you know why he thought of doing that as opposed to changing the sound? I mean, that's a gamble. When you're on the charts and you're rocking and people are buying it, to suddenly switch gears and add cellos and violins and stand-up bass. Well, I guess a lot of them were stand-up bass.
Maybe Buddy didn't really just think of himself as a rock and roll artist. He just thought himself as a musician and was just experimenting with everything,
Well, let's play that and, again, give you a different feel for what Buddy Holly was all about. And this is the one we're talking about, Raining in My Heart. And let's hope it doesn't rain tonight because the guys are going to be performing. Fortunately, it is indoor at the Hobart Art Theater. That's 7:30 this evening. This is Buddy Holly.
The sun is out. The sky is blue. There's not a cloud to spoil the view, but it's raining, raining in my heart. The weatherman says clear today, he doesn't know you've gone away, and it's raining, raining in my heart. Oh, misery, misery, what's gonna become of me? I tell my blues they mustn't show, but soon these tears are bound to flow, 'cause it's raining, raining in my heart. But it's raining, raining in my heart. It's raining, raining in my heart. Oh, misery, misery. What's gonna become of me? I tell my blues they mustn't show, but soon these tears are bound to flow, 'cause it's raining, raining in my heart, raining in my heart, raining in my heart.
Get those umbrellas out. It's raining, raining in my heart. Buddy Holly, again, trying to show you the diversification of this guy who went from rockabilly to using strings to doing country to doing folk, a little calypso rhythm in the song we did prior to that, and all in the course of what, 2 years?
2 years, 18 months, something like that. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And that song you just played, it shows off his vocal skills pretty well. His control was really good.
We're talking today here on Midwest Beat at Lakeshore Public Radio with Kenny James and also with Rob and with Dan, members of Ravon. And we got to give a shout out to Ron.
Yeah,
Ron is missing in action today. Why is he not here?
He's listening to us at home. He couldn't make it out here today. And he's the only member of the band that's living up here. You know,
okay,
you know,
so he has to go down to Pigeon Forge when you guys play.
Well,
in that area.
We play down there. He does a lot of traveling. Yeah,
he gets that.
He's got Mary, his wife, driving for him though. She gets him there in no time.
Oh, that's cool. He's got his own chauffeur.
Yeah, right.
How cool! Best part of marriage.
If it takes you 2 hours to get there, have Mary drive. You'll get there in an hour and a half.
All four of the guys are going to be performing tonight at Hobart Art Theater. Again, that is tonight, September 6th, Friday at 7:30 p.m. Opening the show, The Spaniels Forever. Tomorrow, they'll be at the Acorn Theater in Three Oaks, Michigan. Remember, there's an hour time difference. So that is an 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central tomorrow night in Michigan in Three Oaks. And that is going to be all Ravon. No opening acts, no special guests on that one. It's going to be just... You're going to probably get to more songs tomorrow, but you're going to do a great show tonight, too.
Oh, absolutely. We give it our best every night. And, you know, a lot of people think, well, you're doing 2-3 shows in a row. Do you, like, just, you know, coast your way through the first to save your voice? I'm like, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. You got to give it all each time. And, I got a week or so to rest up after that. So my throat get better. But, yeah, I'm sure I'll be wore out come Sunday morning.
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting, and Dan brought it up, is how you will randomly change the set list, if there even is a set list. You mentioned there's always the first three songs. You kind of got that down.
The last three. So.
Well, and in the middle, it's chaos. Yeah. So what's it like? I mean, how do you follow a guy like that? I remember DJ Fontana telling me before he passed, he goes, when you were with Elvis, he goes, the only thing I watched was his butt, and I kept my beat by watching his wiggle. I never knew what he was going to do. Yeah. So is it a scenario like that where you guys look at each other like, where's this guy going?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
And you got to kind of figure it out mentally?
Yeah, and then even in some of the songs that we do, because he does different stuff with his legs, and he wants that little drum accent, so I'm like, oh, there he goes.
Do you realize how difficult you are?
Oh, it's a good show.
It's not hard. Just watch me.
Wow.
He's talking about I move a lot because Buddy moved a lot, like we were talking about earlier on TV. He just stood there. If I stood there for an hour and a half, 2 hour show, just standing there singing songs, it would be pretty darn boring.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some clips out there, and you can find him, Buddy, sliding across the stage or laying down in King Curtis's saxophone, singing into a mic, and he was wild. In fact, the name, again, we brought about the name of the crickets. They learned that in biology class that crickets rub their legs together as a mating call.
Okay, so that's why he moved his legs.
Well, they all did it.
Right.
You know, Buddy and Bob, when they started that way, when Bob used to play Bob Montgomery, they saw dance around and move around. And when they saw Elvis doing it, they'd just give him, you know, more feed to just do whatever they wanted because Elvis could do it, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
First time I saw you on your own, of course, I've known you for years when you were doing other stuff, but when you were on your own doing the Buddy Holly show, and I think that was at. Obie's
on Ridge Road.
On Ridge Road. And the music's starting. The band's doing their riff. You came running out of the back. You dropped to your knees, very James Brownish, and slid right to the middle of the stage. It reminded me of, did you ever see the movie The Idolmaker?
Yes, I love that movie.
He did that in that movie. And that's the first thing I thought. I'm like, oh, my God. That's the same scene out of the movie. But that was pretty wild because I had the image of Buddy Holly as standing around mostly, you know, kind of Everly Brothers-like. I mean, he'd sing and he'd do his little bit, and it was all sweet and wonderful. Definitely the opposite of an Elvis or a Little Richard. But it turned out that you were revealing the real Buddy Holly. Do you still do the sliding part? Or
When stages permit it.
Okay.
A lot of the stages that we play are
too rough to do that on?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
tear up the knees a bit.
Well, you can't slide on wood.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the stages, like in memories, they'd have bets with me before I go on stage, you know, how far can I slide, you know. And, you know, sometimes I win, sometimes I lose. I miss the mark a little bit. But because that stage was, it was tiled. And
right.
It, you know, and it was perfect. You can slide all day long on it. But a lot of the venues that we play now are either carpeted or wooden stages, or because they're older theaters, and that's right. What we like to play. The old theaters that are revamped.
Like tonight at the Hobart.
Like tonight.
Okay.
Man, they're so fun, and the history that's there. I'm kind of a weird guy. Sometimes I'm new. Like, we played a few years ago on one of your shows. Up in Valpo at the theater there.
Oh, Memorial Opera House.
Memorial Opera
yeah.
House. And I was like, man, the Marx Brothers played here.
Yeah.
And you kind of get that vibe. You know, it's like, this is cool. I guess I'm weird.
A lot of famous folks played. There's a lot. There's ghosts in that place. There really are.
I believe it.
You can hear things at night when everybody's gone. Sometimes it's like, what was that? Why did that piece of clothing in the prop room move? You know, things like that. I mean, I've heard some great stories. I've heard a few strange sounds there, but I don't know. Maybe Hobart Art Theater's haunted, too. We'll have to, like, hang out afterwards or something. Speaking of afterwards, I don't know if you're going to be up for it or not, but since we have a show Saturday as well. But usually, and last year we did it, is after the show you do a meet and greet next door at the record bin. And if you are so inclined, we will order some pizzas again, and we will have a little meet and greet for fans, and they want to come over and say hi, as opposed to hanging at the theater because they want to get cleaned up in there and do their thing.
Right.
So we move it on over, and we hang out there for a while if you guys want to do it.
And that's the coolest record shop. I'm so proud, man. I first met you. You were working at that place in Woodmar Mall.
Yeah, Woodmar Records.
Yeah.
That was a good store, too, though.
I didn't know if we wanted to give them a jingle or not.
Oh, sure.
I didn't know.
No, I love that place.
It was very cool. And
there's pieces of Woodmar in my store now.
Is that right?
Yeah. Pieces of, like, there's two light boxes that were part of Woodmar. There's some of the colored vinyl that hangs on the ceiling. Those were originally in the wall ceiling of Woodmar. So there's a little piece. There's a Hegwisch Records poster from that part.
Yeah.
Little piece of Point East in there. All the different things. It's like my man cave, which the public can come to.
And not only the great decor, but, man, some albums that are hard to find.
Yeah. I just got some new Fats Domino, new old Fats Domino.
Oh, really?
They're a little pricey, but they are pristine. They are really nice.
We have a contract coming up with the next show. Maybe we can work that out.
In lieu of payments, we will have gift cards.
Hey, sorry, guys, you're not getting paid this week, but look at my new album.
We've talked a little bit about Rob's background, but Dan, musically, where are you from that led to you joining Raybon?
Oh, all over the place. My father and my grandfather played drums. I've been playing drums for 56 years. I started when I was 4 years old. Back when John F. Kennedy was assassinated in that March.
Wow.
That was one of the first things that I learned.
At four?
At 4 years old. And then my dad would play in bands, and this is mostly like in the St. Louis area when I was younger, and he would be in these trios. And I'd sit on his laps, and I'd play the hands, but my feet weren't long enough to hit the pedals.
Okay.
So he'd do the feet, and I'd do the hands, and they're like, hey, that's a kid playing, you know. And just doing
that. It's almost
that,
like a marionette show or whatever, you know.
it's doing that and just going through high school and then just playing in different genres. I do a lot of jazz and country growing up. I like the big band
sound. Why you like the Brushes.
Yeah, you know, Gene Krupa, Buddy Rich. And now today, for me, my new hero that I communicate with a little bit is Nate Morton. He's the drummer on The Voice.
Okay.
And if you ever watch him, I could watch him play drums all day. He's just one of my guys that I like to watch. And but there's so many good drummers, and playing the jazz, the big band, the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I tell people, and I've taught kids too, and I tell their parents, I say, let them play in whatever genres they can, because the more you play, the more versatile you'll be.
Okay.
And I think that really helped. That and playing in orchestras, learning the marimbas, the timpanis, and all that. Like he said, percussion. I actually had to take a test and had to play notes on a piano, because piano is a percussion instrument, because the hammer strikes the string.
Oh, I never thought
so
of that.
So you had to learn.
I always think of it as a string instrument.
No, it's a percussion instrument, and I had to learn certain chords to pass the test.
Wow.
So just doing that and then hooked
so
up with Kenny.
Do you still do different styles? Are you still in other bands or do different things besides
this? Actually,
yes.
I play in church. I played in a lot of different Christian venues. I
playing some classic rock bands and whatever.
He played for Shania at one time.
Yeah, oh. Just for a little substitute for a little bit. So
I'd have played some for country. Her for free. Like DJ said, just watching the back end move. That's all I care about.
She's a little bit short girl.
She's just adorable. So you know, love her. Love her. Tell me she was nice.
Oh, yeah, she was.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. I didn't want to hear anything bad about her because I just love her to death. We went to Vegas to see her, and we had just missed her run, and Celine Dion was there. I'm like, really? Nothing against Celine, but I came for Shania. I wanted to see her ride the horse on stage, you know, because she was riding a horse in Vegas on stage and things. And I just never got to see her. But, Kenny, what is your favorite Buddy Holly songs to sing? And it's probably not one, but let's say the top three that you enjoy most in the show.
I really like doing Bo Diddley. I mean, that's for the past...
Wait, Bo Diddley. That was a Bo Diddley song.
Bo Diddley, my baby diamond ring.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that got to do with Buddy?
Buddy recorded it.
Did he?
Yeah.
Another nugget I didn't know.
There you go. He did a lot of, you know, he did Bo Diddley, and he did a lot of Little Richard, you know.
Okay.
So,
but yeah, Little Richard's piano, Buddy's guitar. Did he adapt it to guitar?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You got to turn Teddy, me on to some of this stuff.
Ready Teddy.
Okay.
Slipping and a sliding. He did slipping, you know, Little Richard's version of slipping and sliding is really over the top. You know, it's Little Richard at his best. Slipping and a sliding, you know. And Buddy's is more slipping and a sliding, peeping and a hiding, been told a long time ago. So, you know, we do a lot. But
is that stuff in the show, too?
Oh,
I mean, obviously, you just mentioned the Bo Diddley as part of one of your highlights. But
yeah, it's one of my favorite songs. You can't go wrong with a Bo Diddley beat. Anybody out there listening, if you have a bad day, put Bo Diddley on and you'll be fine.
Right, right. Look what it did for George Thorogood.
Exactly.
It created a career for him.
Yeah.
But other than that, what are some of your favorite songs?
True Love Ways, obviously, is one of my favorites. It means a lot to me. I always dedicate it to my wife, Danielle, at the show. But I also dedicate it to my mom. It's one of my mom's favorites. When I first started doing this, I put a tape together that I had as a promo video tape, and it was bad, but, you know,
when
you first
get
started, you know.
Right.
And we did that, and my mom just loved True Love Ways, and I always do it, you know, I think of mom.
One of the things that we haven't talked on yet that I definitely want to address, and that is obviously you have a great band with you, and it takes that to make a good show. You might be the lead guy, you might be the Buddy Holly, but like Buddy, if you didn't have that support system behind you musically, the show might fall flat. Let's talk about some of Buddy's players. One in particular, Waylon Jennings. I remember interviewing him. It was in the 80s, and I mentioned Buddy, and the tone of the interview changed abruptly. He seriously got in a depressed tone, and he's like, I really don't like to talk about this, but if you want to ask me a question, go ahead. And I clearly wanted to jump in the deep end with that.
But you don't want to tick Waylon off.
I don't want to tick Waylon off. And I could tell that it was emotionally hard for him.
Yeah.
And out of respect for him and his friend Buddy Holly and Richie and all the guys that died, I said, okay, you know, I'll take that one question. I forget what the question was ultimately was, but I just remember him being very down and saying, every day I live is a gift. And he said, when I perform, he's in my heart. And I thought, what a beautiful thing to say. But a lot of people don't realize that Waylon started out as a rock and roller with Buddy Holly as his bass player.
Right.
And because of the survival, he should have died that day. He was on that plane.
Oh, yeah.
And got off. Tell the story, if you will, and share that with my listeners.
A lot of people come up to me or will say, you know, but Waylon Jennings was one of the Crickets. And that's not
really
true.
Buddy
had left the Crickets. They had split up, and Buddy had to go out on this tour that he didn't really want to do, but he needed the money.
He had a new baby coming.
Yeah, and the record money wasn't coming in to him directly, and it was getting held up. And Waylon was there in New York with him. He was staying there a couple of weeks on his couch. Buddy was producing his first album, Joe Blanc. And he got this tour thing, and he says, well, I need to put a band together. He says, I need a bass player. He says, I got this guy, Tommy Alsip, that'll play guitar, but I need a bass player. He says, I don't know how to play bass. Well, buddy, they said, the story goes that he ran downstairs from his apartment building, ran down to Manny's Music, which is a couple blocks down, bought a bass, came back and went to him and said, here, you got a week to learn it. So,
wow.
Yeah, and so... And Waylon says, once I figured out that the strings were just the first four strings on the guitar, I knew what I was doing, you know. So he went on a tour with him then.
Now, was that just the Surf Ballroom tour that he did?
Yeah.
He wasn't with him prior to that whole tour?
That was it. That was that tour. I don't remember how many dates they had played up to that point or how many had played with him up to that point, because they lost their drummer, Carl Bunch, halfway through that tour with Frostbite from the buses. They went through so many buses. But and Waylon, yeah, his tone always changed when Buddy was brought up, because the last words they said to each other.
And this is deep, yeah.
Well, yeah, Buddy rented the plane. It was going to be him and his band flying to Moorhead, Minnesota, to their next gig. And at the last minute, Bopper talked him out of his ticket for $15 and his sleeping bag. And Waylon says, well, I didn't really care. I mean, I care to fly or whatever. It doesn't matter to me. And he gave it to him. And then Richie Valens did the coin toss with Tommy Alsip. And
Richie had been sick. He had a cold.
Yeah, he had a cold.
And the heater was out on the bus, so really is worried about getting pneumonia.
Exactly.
So they wanted to just fly him to the hotel or wherever they were going.
It was such a bad storm up there that it was a bad, bad winter, and those buses couldn't handle it. And the last words, they drove him to the airport, and the last words they spoke to each other, Buddy says, don't get any frostbite on that bus, ha, 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 see you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, laughing like, I'm flying ahead, and I'll be in a hotel room tonight. And Waylon says, well, I hope your old plane crashes.
Wow.
You know, that's...
That's heavy.
Gotta hurt.
Yeah,
you know,
to carry that your whole life.
Who doesn't kid around with their friends like that so much, you know, when... that haunted him forever. He talked about it throughout his book, his biography that Waylon wrote. You know, what would Buddy do? What would Buddy have done in this situation? I mean, his first son he named after him, and he named Buddy. So.
Wow.
Yeah, they were really, really
close. Is he in music, Buddy?
I
know Shooter is.
Shooter is. I think Buddy worked in Nashville at the Gibson Guitar Factory.
Okay.
I mean, so he's in music in some ways, but I think he was more of a luthier for Gibson, the last I had heard.
Wow. Yeah, Waylon was quite an interesting character. And you were on that show in 88, Superfest. You were playing with Travis James.
Yeah,
I believe at that show. Weren't you there at the Knights of Columbus in Lansing?
Oh yeah,
the Jordan Airs. We did the whole Elvis thing.
Yeah,
we had the Jimmy Velvet Touring Museum.
Yeah,
and I got yelled at because I went over and I leaned on the spin-out car, and Jimmy Velvet's people came and like yelled at me. It's like, I'm paying for you to be here. Yeah, I can lean on it if I want. No, you can't. But that was the Waylon show. We had the Everly Brothers on the bill, the Bellamy Brothers, the Elvis spectacular thing we did. And that's where I had done the interview with Waylon. I went on his bus, and he and Jesse Coulter and a couple of the band members were sitting there. And they were playing Pinochle, I think it was, or Blackjack or something. And I was bringing him towels to make sure, you know, because he had just, this was one of the first dates after his heart surgery. So he was back on the road. And went in there, and it's like, Mr. Jennings, do you need anything? Blah, blah, blah. He goes, yeah, can you sit down for a minute? He goes, so-and-so is hitting the head. I need someone to, I'm hot right now. He didn't want to stop. So I'm like, I have no idea how to play. He goes, that's even better. And so I sat down, I was playing, I think it was Pinochle, which I still don't know how to play. And did two or three hands, got up, got him some more waters or whatever they needed. And I'm leaving. He goes, thanks, kid. And he goes, hey, hang on a second. And he went over and he reached into the thing and he threw me a vest, which I still have. It's a Waylon Jennings vest that his crew wore with the wings on it.
Yeah.
And I wore it that whole day. And it did get a little bit dirty and, you know, some coffee spills on it, things, because I was running for all the artists. But I had it cleaned and it is framed and is now part of my little museum. In fact, maybe I'll bring that out for tonight. And hang it on the wall.
That'd be cool.
Because I've got, like, Paul Rogers' jacket and stuff. Maybe I'll replace it with the Waylon vest for tonight, just
that'd
so we can have a little touch of Waylon there.
That would be awesome. I'd love that.
So, but yeah, that's a great story. And a lot of people don't realize the Waylon Jennings connection.
Well, you know, Bopper Jr. told me how he met Waylon. I'm sure he told you too. Is they were at Clear Lake.
Okay.
And no, I'm sorry, it wasn't at Clear Lake. It was before Waylon went back to Clear Lake. He was playing at a festival somewhere, and Bopper walked up to the bus, opened up the door, walked up on the bus. And Waylon's sitting there. He says, "I'm J.P. Richardson Jr. Tell me about my daddy." And Waylon tells that story too. He says, When he walked up there, he said he looked like he was back in 1959. He thought he just saw a ghost. It scared him to death.
Wow. He did look like his dad.
He did.
And like you said, he wore that leopard jacket that was his dad's, right?
Yeah. Wow. They exhumed his body.
The Bopper,
and moved it to another part of the cemetery, so there'd be a big monument for him there in Beaumont, I guess is where it's at. And they brought Bill Blass from UT, as a forensic pathologist, brought him out to do the autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did, he flew the body back to UT, but took it to Sevierville, to the hospital there in Sevierville, and did the autopsy. And then flew it back.
Why do a new autopsy? I mean, obviously because the plane crash.
There was not one done. Okay. And over the years, imagine being the only son of all three of those guys growing up. And, of course, he didn't know it until later years who his dad was. But after he found out, everybody telling him, your dad caused the plane crash because he was moving in his seat and trying to trade places. Or Buddy Holly caused the plane crash because they were playing with his pistol that he carried that the farmer found in the field. And Bopper didn't die. He was trying to walk to get help because they found him 150 yards from the plane. And all that was dispelled. He died of – there were 7 or 8 different injuries that were fatal.
Wow.
And he was – reason he was that far away, he when it hit
thrown.
The ground and was – yeah, he was thrown. The other guys weren't because they were up front.
Wow. Let's play some Waylon Jennings doing Buddy. Front sell this song for me. What are we going to listen to here?
This song is what is said to be the last song that Buddy Holly wrote. It's called Learning the Game. It was a slow ballad song. It was just him and his acoustic guitar. And this album that it's off of, Not Fade Away, Remembering Buddy, it's the last song on that album, and it's the coolest version of this song. I mean, he does.
Is this
well.
Waylon by
this
himself?
This is Waylon.
Okay, let's listen.
Hearts that are broken and love that's untrue, these go with learning the game. When you love her and she doesn't love you, you're only learning the game. When she says that you're the only one she'll ever love, then you find that you are not the one she's thinking of. Feeling so sad and you're all alone and blue, that's when you're learning the game. That's when you're learning the game. Broken and love that's untrue, these go with learning the game. When you love her and she doesn't love you, you're only learning the game. When she says that you're the only one she'll ever love, then you find that you are not the one she's thinking of. Feeling so sad and you're all alone in blue, that's when you're learning the game. That's when you're learning the game. That's when you're learning the game.
Waylon Jennings paying tribute to Buddy Holly, his friend. When was that recorded, Kenny?
That was the early 2000s. I don't remember the exact year, but, you know, it's just a very cool album. It's got Marty Stewart and Steve Earle doing Crying, Waiting, Hoping together. It's got the Hollies singing with Buddy Holly on Peggy Sue Got Married. You know, Holly's named after
right.
him, you know. And, it's just super, super cool album.
Wow. Kenny James in the studio with us. Also, Dan and Rob are here missing in action. Ron, the bass player from Rave On. We are going to get to the Rave On song in just a few minutes. In fact, you can go ahead and cue that up. We'll get to that in just a moment. But these guys are playing tonight at the Hobart Art Theater, 7:30 p.m. They're doing a full, solid concert set, opening up the show, The Spaniels Forever. They were live in studio on Tuesday with us, and it's going to take you from the doo-wop days of the street lamp singing on up to the rockabilly years of 1959 when we lost Buddy, along with Richie Valens, Big Bopper, and I'd be remiss not to remember Roger Peterson either, who was the pilot. Now, you were mentioned about the exhumation of Big Bopper and how that cleared a lot of the mystique. One of the things it also cleared is it was not pilot error, as I recall. It was the plane had a problem because of the snow and the cold.
Right, I guess it
wasn't maintained
well. The
temperature
froze gauges
fuel lines
and
or gauges,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they weren't going off when they were – they got a weird vision, I guess. They left in a snowstorm, which is weird.
Not a good thing, yeah.
And
from a cornfield area, you know, they didn't have much of an airport there either.
No,
it was
they
like
didn't.
An old country road.
And it was Mason City, Iowa, which is like two blocks down from Clear Lake where the bomber was.
They were near, what, 2 minutes?
Yeah,
maybe?
They made 5 miles maybe.
Yeah.
And they said they were watching the plane go off, and it looks, you know, when it went off in the distance, it looked like it just went off in the horizon. But what they're saying is inside, you know, couldn't read the gauges, and you can't see with the snow. You know, they were accelerating. That's why they hit with such force. They thought they were going up when they were declining. And
hit the ground.
Just hit the ground, yeah.
Wow.
Like right next to a fence post.
And that field is a like a mecca, a pilgrimage site for rock and roll fans. There is, I know there's is there a statue or a stone?
There's
something
there.
There's
a monument.
Some kind of memorial.
At the site, yeah, yeah. And there's one in front of Surf Ballroom as well.
Which is still doing concerts.
Yeah.
And every year they do a memorial show, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Every February, see a lot of the guys that were there that are left. You know, we lost Tommy Alsip last couple years ago, who's the guitar player on the last tour. And pretty much all the Crickets are gone now. And, you know, it's tough to even meet people that have been there. There's a lady, I was just telling these guys, she contacted me the other day, says her birthday is, I can't remember the date now, but she lives in Clear Lake. She had seen our show somewhere, she didn't say where, and it was her 65th birthday, so I'm sure she wasn't around at that time, but she wanted us to come out and play her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we're playing the night before, 13 hours away, and if we had a bus, Tom, if you get us we could have made it. But
with a heater.
Yeah, with a heater.
You know, we're talking about the Spaniels opening for you guys tonight and the whole classic doo-wop vocal group thing. Another one of those pieces of history that sometimes seems to get mixed up is the fact that Dion of Dion and the Belmonts, another doo-wop singer from New York back in the day that had met Buddy when he moved there,
also on that last show.
He was on that last show. Why was he not on the bus or on the airplane?
I don't know.
Was he traveling independently?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, originally he he chartered the plane to take him and his band to the next place just so they can get there early enough and get a hotel room and shower. They've been living on a bus for, you know, days at a time. And, Danny and the Juniors were there. Frankie Sardo was on the show. And so I don't know. I think when the guys started catching wind and what happened was there was only two other seats besides Buddy and Rogers. So it was either going to be Bopper and Richie or, I mean, it could have just as well have been Dion or somebody.
Right.
You know, but, he claims to be the guy that did the coin toss.
Dion?
I hear that interview a lot, but I'm not saying he didn't do that, you know, but...
So the coin toss was between Richie and who?
Tommy Alsip.
Okay.
The guitar player.
So Tommy lost that coin toss and saved his life.
Yeah, and they were looking for a fifth body because he lost that. He said, hey, buddy, I've got a telegram waiting for me. When we get there, will you pick it up for me? And I don't know if somebody's wiring him money or what it was. He said, well, I'm going to need your ID. So he just handed him his wallet.
Mm.
And stuck, and he had all the clothes with him because he was just going to, when he gets here, he's just going to have him throw it in the wash anyway.
Right.
So they thought there was missing a fifth body.
Wow. Now, you talked to Tommy over
I met
years.
Tommy years ago, yeah, yeah.
Did you talk about the plane crash, or
no.
Did you avoid it?
Yeah.
Because that's a weird thing to talk to someone about. That's how I felt with Waylon.
Yeah, I talked with him, and we just talked guitars. He was playing a Samick hollow body jazz guitar, and he played it for a while. And I used to sell Samick guitars when I lived in Oregon.
Were you doing Buddy Holly at that time? Did he know you were doing
a
tribute?
I was, but it was at a NAMM show that I've seen.
Okay.
Him. And so I wasn't, you know.
In character.
I wasn't in character. I was just being Kenny, walking around like a, you know, like a starstruck celebrity. You know,
uh-huh.
I met Dick Dale that day, and you know,
who we just lost.
Yeah,
another one.
Yeah, Dimebag Darrell. I met him that day.
Now that's an odd pairing.
Yeah,
Dick Dale and Dimebag in the same like quadrant there.
Yeah, well, it's even funnier than that. I was standing there and I'm looking around and I see a big crowd of people around this booth and I'm looking and I'm trying to see who it was, and when I got to look through the people, mm-hmm. it was Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit. I said, oh, that's cool. I'm not going to squeeze my way through there to see him and everything. And I just turned, half to turn, and looked down the aisle, and there's Dick Dale standing there talking with some guy. And I looked back, and I said, well, I'm going to go over here and see a real legend
mm-hmm.
and talk to him. And then later that day, I met Dimebag, and I was telling him where my store was at and everything. And I forgot what it was. He was looking for a certain pedal. And I said, man, I get used pedals in all the time. And Portland, Oregon is, I mean, if you want used gear,
that's the place.
I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, good stuff, you know. You can get a pedal that might have been owned by Kurt Cobain or somebody, you know.
Hmm.
But he called my store a couple times. Hey, Kenny, man, what's going on?
Dimebag?
Yeah. I said, man, I'm sorry, man. I ain't found that pedal yet or nothing. He goes, all right, man, I'll be in Portland in a couple weeks, man. I might come out and check you out, man, dude. Take care, dude, you know.
I remember interviewing Dick Dale and being in awe of him. And a lot of people don't realize how important he was, too. They think of just the one song, you know.
And those that don't know who Dick Dale is, watch Pulp Fiction. The music, that's him.
Right. And he was also in, was it Back to the Beach with Frankie Avalon and Ned Funicello, the resurgence in the 80s of the 60s beach movie. And he played with Stevie Ray Vaughan on Pipeline.
Exactly.
What a great,
that
is a great pairing there. Two different generations. But we just lost him, and I had heard he was a little difficult, but he was very nice when I dealt with him.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I got a picture of he and I together. It's hanging on my wall at home, and you can see the look on his face is like, if he doesn't hurry up and get done with this picture, I might be whipping somebody, you know, because he had that look about him.
Yeah, no, that's what I had heard about him, but my experience in talking to him, he was very cordial.
Oh, yeah, great guy. We talked flying.
Huh.
We didn't talk guitars, because I noticed his jacket said Dick Dale pilot. So he was piloting. He was giving pilot lessons out there.
Wow.
Yeah. So we talked. I want to learn that sometime. You know.
Very cool. But we are talking again with Kenny James and the Ray Vaughan Band. We've got Dan and Rob here. Ron will be with them tonight at Hobart Art Theater again, 7:30 p.m. That's tonight at the Hobart Art with the Spaniels Forever. And the band is called Ray Vaughan, so let's play that song now. We've still got about 30 minutes left, but we're going to get this one out of the way because it's one I definitely want to get to. This is Ray Vaughan, Buddy Holly.
Hello. Things you say and do make me want to be with you.
Rave On, name of the band, name of the song, that is Buddy Holly, and you'll be hearing that and other Buddy classics tonight, September 6th at Hobart Art Theater. Tomorrow, Saturday, on Buddy's actual birthday, would have been 83 years old. He's been gone three times as long as he was alive, and yet we're still talking about him, still playing songs of his. As I mentioned earlier, all these different new artists, Cobra Starship, The Fray, Pat Moynihan, all recording Buddy Holly songs. Weezer, for gosh sakes, did a song called Buddy Holly. I mean, how much more impact can you get? The Beatles took their name in tribute to the Crickets. The Hollies were all big Buddy Holly fans. So they said, well, if it's good for Buddy, we'll just pluralize it and become the Hollies. There's just so many stories connected to this guy. And I just learned another one while that song was playing, and that is Ray Vaughn's got a kind of a quirky history, the song. Tell the listeners about it. The legend goes,
and I don't know how well you can check it, but I have read it before, and a lot of people have talked about it, is that the last song that Buddy Holly would play on stage is Ray Vaughn. But in Clear Lake, he came out and did an encore of Johnny B. Goode just to show that he could play that. But he normally always played Ray Vaughan. And he gets on a plane, and we know what happens. That plane was purchased by by that company from Jerry Lee Lewis.
Okay, so Jerry used to fly in it.
Jerry used to fly in it, whether he did or not, but it belonged to him, you know.
Okay.
And years later, 1984, was it? Ricky Nelson passed away.
Yeah, yeah.
Last song he played on stage was Rave On. He always closes his concert with that. And gets on a plane, and you know what happened there.
Right.
And bought that plane from Jerry Lee Lewis a year before.
Different plane, obviously.
Different plane, yeah.
But also bought a plane that used to be Jerry Lee's.
Now, I mean,
that's kind of weird.
That's a story I've always heard.
So never play Rave On as your last song.
Well, we try not to.
Just in case. Don't tempt fate. So how is the – you got two shows. You got tonight at the Hobart Art Theater with the Spaniels, and then you've got the full night tomorrow at the Acorn Theater. How will the sets change? And Dan and Rob, I know you guys are probably wondering the same thing. It's like, what's he going to throw at us? So what will the show differences be? I mean, if someone sees the show tonight, it's not going to be the same show tomorrow.
If you go to both shows, I mean, you'll hear some. You're going to hear a lot of the same, obviously, because you can't not
do Peggy Sue
certain songs, you know. But we have more time, and we'll add more songs to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just what time allows. And sometimes we'll get the guys in the back of the room saying, oh, okay, that's enough, stop. And we'll just keep going, play one more song, one more time.
I think last time you were at the Acorn, you came out like twice for like double encores. And each one was like a multi-song, like two or three song encore. And it was just like, okay, he's coming back. Because the people were standing up and applauding. It was great.
I do remember that. You know why I started coming back? Because I thought I heard you say, let's bring him out one more time.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, man, he's working me to death.
Those are good shows. We have such a good time, and I need to convey that to the listeners. If you're going to see a tribute show, if you're going to see I hate to say oldies, but let's say nostalgia or a tribute show, this is the one to see because it is a lot of fun. After all these years, why is it still so fun for you? I mean, you genuinely have a good time up there, and that is crystal clear. This isn't a job. I mean, after all these years, how do you keep it fresh?
I tell everybody, well, you like your job. I said, don't call it a job because I won't want to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's being a musician. You know, it's entertainment. Let's put this. I don't call myself a singer. I don't call myself a guitar player. I call myself an entertainer.
Okay. Right?
Because there's millions more singers out there that can sing better than I do. There's a million more guitar players that can play better than I do. And there's better entertainers out there than I am. But I just want to entertain. I love entertaining. I worked a job in Hammond for 8 years. A job.
Mm-hmm.
8 to 4:30 every day, punched a clock and did everything. Worked over there near the refinery. Down Calumet Avenue, there's a place mm-hmm. called Griffin Dewatering. I worked there for 8 years, and I would work there, and then run home, grab my guitar, and go out to the Pioneer Tap on Kennedy Avenue, and we'd play till 2:30.
Was that with Travis?
That was with Travis, okay. With Silver Wings. I did it with other bands, too. But
Pair of 45s. Yeah. Wasn't that the single?
Well, Pair of 38s.
Pair of 38s, yeah. I remember that single and with the fringe jacket and the guns. I'm like, okay, that's very posed of the era kind of photo, very dated.
And, you know, I owe a lot to doing what I did with Travis, being his guitar player and him, you know, doing the Elvis thing and everything. Because he would call me and say, hey, man, so-and-so has got an Elvis show and they're looking for a guitar player. Can I give him your number? I'm like, well, yeah, sure. And a lot of these guys at that time would get their shows together, and they wouldn't have a band. They just hired
pieces. A lot of them sang the tracks, and they still do.
Yeah, well, that started becoming popular. Back then, it was, you know, the tracks weren't as popular yet. And, you know, they just throw bands together. And I took my band at the time, Lost and Found Band, and turned it into a band that learned all the Elvis stuff. You know, the Aloha from Hawaii versions of C.C. Rider to, you know, the International Hotel to different, you know, which version of this song do you want? Because you know how he did. He did everything different. And it started out that way. And I was playing for a guy named Joe Chirito from Chicago, who's an Elvis impersonator. And his manager had come up to me at the end of the night to pay us. And because we always played like an hour, you know, at least a set of music before Elvis came out to get the crowd going. And I was doing Eddie Cochran and you know, Ricky Nelson and Buddy Holly stuff. And this manager came up to me and said, I got a great idea, man. You do that Buddy Holly stuff very well. He says, the next show you play for us, why don't you open as Buddy Holly? And I'm like, man, no, I don't want to be an impersonator. Back then it was okay to call him that, you know. I don't want to do that. No. Because, you know, for whatever reasons, I wasn't into it. It was all right. Well, here's your money. He counts it out real quick to the band. It was like $400 or $500 for a five-piece band. And he goes, oh, by the way, here's what Elvis made tonight. And he holds up a check. It was like $1,300. I went the next day, started finding the glasses. I'm like, that ain't
fair. You've been doing it ever since.
Yeah, ever since. And it's been great. It's still great. I mean, it's like anything else. I mean, it's got its up and downs. It's feast and famine at different times sometimes. And you got to stay on top of it to keep things booked and keep things going. And because if you don't, I got very I'm spoiled or lazy. When I was that?
Comfortable?
Comfortable. Spoiled. It's probably better.
Okay.
But in Pigeon Forge, I was working six nights a week doing, you know, four or five songs a night, you know, because it was a big cast. And I did that every night, and it was just comfortable. I didn't have to go out and find the work, really. You know, I'd get calls or whatever. And then it got to where I said, man, I'm getting tired of being here. I need to be out on the road. And I start calling places, and then for... Are you still? What you doing now? You know, because you don't get a hold of people. So you got to stay on top of it, so people don't forget. So you can call this agent from New Mexico or wherever and say, hey, I need a gig or something. You know.
On average, how many dates are you guys doing right now? Doing the Buddy Holly show? In a year.
We probably, as a group, 15 to 20 would be a good year. This year we've hit that by the end of the year, but I do other shows too. I work with other people. I get called just to me to go out and work with another
as buddy.
A few months back we were on our way to Terre Haute, but the night before we stopped in Cave City because I was hired to play Buddy Holly with a Jerry Lee Lewis and a young Elvis. So we did a show there too. So
when you do that. Is your band with you, or they have a house band, or you sing the tracks?
Well, they have a house band. I don't do Buddy Holly track shows because I feel like it's ripping the people off. Well, not so much for the Elvis stuff, because you can build tracks with the Elvis stuff. You can find tracks, just like I said, for every version of every song that it seems like that you can find for Elvis. So you can do his pokes at it, Annie, where he slows it real down, hook, two, three, you know, all that stuff. But there's not a lot out there on Buddy Holly, and I think I would just be cheapening myself and the show by just standing there singing to the tracks that they have and then me making up something else for the next 15, 20 minutes. You know what
right.
I mean? So I guess I can go in a studio and build my own tracks and
even with your band. I mean, yeah, I've seen artists do that.
But there's two reasons I don't like to do that. Is one, you don't have that closeness of the feel of the live music with you. You, mm-hmm. you don't get that feeling. And it would be cutting my friends out of work.
Right.
You know? And, you know, we're all a family. If, you know, if I go, they go as much as I can. I'm not going to get hired somewhere and they say, well, we need a band too. Well, I'm going to call these other guys. I won't call my band.
Right.
I mean, I don't do things like that. You know, they're all a part of it. Not all the jobs pay well.
Right.
But Dan himself said, he goes, well, if I'm in your band, I'm in your band. You know, so we both lose money sometimes. You know, by driving there and have to, you know, do this and everything else.
Right.
By the time it's all done, we it costs us $50 to do the gig, but we have so much fun,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I can't see myself not working with my band as much as I can, you know.
Okay. We're going to play another cover. And is this the Mavericks, you said?
Oh, yeah.
Off of the... The tribute album, Midnight Shift. What's the story behind it? I'm not familiar with this song. I've heard it, but I'm not familiar with where it plays in Buddy's catalog.
Well, it's an earlier song. It's not a lot of people know it. If you do know it, you're a Buddy Holly fan, you know this song, it's going to sound totally different when you hear the Mavericks doing it. But man, it's so cool the way they do it.
Is this one in your set sometimes?
Sometimes.
Okay,
sometimes.
Because it is very deep.
Yeah.
It's a very deep tune.
Yeah.
All right. This is the Mavericks paying tribute to Buddy in Midnight Shift.
If Annie puts her hair up on her head, paints them lips up bright, bright red, wears that dress that fits real tight, starts staying out till the middle of the night, says that a friend gave her a lift, well, been working on the midnight shift. If she acts a little funny, seems a little strange, start spending your money for a brand new fangs, doubts that she wants to use the car, never explain what she wants at bar, brother, there just ain't no gifts, and he's been working on the midnight shift.
Mavericks paying tribute to Buddy, and unique version there.
Very.
Very unique.
It doesn't even
version.
Sound like the Mavericks, like you were
no,
saying.
No, it does. I'm used to their Baby Loves My Tractor or whatever it is. That was the Mavericks I know.
Yeah.
And again, we're talking with Kenny James and Ray Vaughn. We've got Dan and Rob here. They'll be performing at the Art Theater tonight and tomorrow at the Acorn Theater in Three Oaks, 7:30 p.m. Central tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central tomorrow. We do have a time change of an hour, so make sure you note that. Well, we've gotten to know Dan and Rob a little bit. Missing, as I mentioned, is Ron, bass player of the band, who you have known for a long time. He's been with you for how long?
Ron and I have known each other since grade school. We've been together, been friends. We're brothers, you know, right down to the letter. We went to Scott Middle School together, and I met Ron. He was a guitar player. He was a guitar playing fool back in middle school, playing, you know, with can't remember the group he was playing with in the garage band, but man, they're pulling out, you know, Cat Scratch Fever, and I mean, they were doing some stuff. And we got to high school, and we joined choir together, and we started playing more music together. And when we were old enough, we went out to a place called Pharaoh's Pizza there in right off Kennedy Avenue in Hessville, or Pow Wow. A lot of people
Pow Wow. I remember Pow Wow.
And we did a duo. We were two guitars, two voices, just sitting there. They'd have a guitar night in there every once in a while. Different guys would play in there. I remember a guy named Green. Last name was Green. I think you know what I'm talking about. He was always on the public act. Terry Green, maybe?
That sounds familiar.
He was play there a lot. We used to see him. And what we do, Everly Brothers, we do, you know, Homer and Jethro. Wow.
That takes me back. And Blue Top and Pow Wow. Yeah. You drive between the two, and that was the cruise.
Yeah, you know, he was going to pay us $25, and at the end of the night, you know, there's quite a few people who said, we didn't sell a lot of pizzas, so here's $10 in a pizza. We thought, okay, free food. We didn't know you were ripped off. But we went to Morton High School. We graduated in 1983. We were always there for each other, and kind of the same thing when I was putting the Buddy Holly band together. When I was already gone on the West Coast, and I was coming back to do a show and just putting this band together, and Ron says, I don't have bass, and well, went down to Wachala's Music that used to be there.
Kind of like the Waylon story.
Yeah, kind of the same way. And then it's been ever since. You know.
So he's always stayed on bass?
He's always been there.
By necessity.
And Ron is an accomplished guitar player. He plays classical. When we were in high school, he won state medals for in choir class and stuff for playing classical guitar. I mean, he's
wow,
and he's just a nut, and I love him.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, he's a big part of the show too. He kind of serves as your announcer, if you will, your house MC in the band, and like the band director almost.
Yeah,
is he technically the band director?
Yeah, he's the band leader, director. He keeps me on a leash lately, too. We're talking about the set list and things, you know. And Ron's like, man, look, we got a new player. We got a new guy. Keep the set list. And it's usually a big joke through the thing. Like, you know, there's a bet going on. But how many songs into it is he going to change it up? But
right. We
always, like I said, we always do the first three, and the last three are always the same. And we mix it up in there. I like to keep it loose because I want to know the feel of the people. Mm-hmm. You know, if I feel they're ready for Shake, Rattle, and Roll, then we're going to throw it in instead of doing a ballad. You know, if they're up, let's keep them up. You know, and then when I get tired, I'll slow down and do a ballad.
Rob, as the new guy for like 3-4 months now, how many songs have you learned of the Buddy catalog? I mean, if he throws something at you that you haven't done, how do you deal with that?
Well, the first thing I did was go out and buy like the Buddy Holly anthology CD.
Okay, so you learned everything you could.
I got that. I think it's probably been about 36.
Hey, it's
songs.
A tax write-off, man. It's all right.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. I forgot. So yeah, it was a crash course in all of this in all of these songs, but. But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
So you're settled in. You're going to stay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. This is just an awesome experience. And I'm, like I said before, I'm just great to be here. So it's
He's always ready for Tom Petty. You throw out some Tom Petty, he's always ready to play it.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Instead, you're trading Tom Petty for Norman Petty.
There you go.
No relation, though. Tonight, you can see these guys live at the Hobart Art Theater. Again, this is Buddy Holly's 83rd birthday celebration. This isn't just a show. This is a true party for one of rock's architects, one of rock's pioneers. And, I mean, just listen to the songs that... And you know them all. Peggy Sue, That'll Be the Day, Words of Love, Maybe Baby, Rayvon, Oh Boy, I'm Gonna Love You Too, Think It Over, It's So Easy, Every Day, Not Fade Away, Heartbreak, or Heartbeat, and of course, True Love Ways. Let's play that now. I promised we'd play that. This is Buddy Holly.
Before you play that song, I want to, I mean, this is a good lead into it. There's a fifth member of the Rayvon Band, and that is my wife, Danielle. She does the bookings for us. She takes care of things for us on the road. She keeps me in check. She tells me when I'm supposed to do something, when I'm not supposed to. But she's the fifth member of the band, and you know, I always do this song for my mom, but since we're playing now, we're going to dedicate it to band number five, Danielle.
All right, here we go.
Just you know why. Why you and I will by and by know true love ways. Sometimes we'll sigh, sometimes we'll cry, and just you and I know true love ways. Throughout the days, our true love ways will bring us joys to share with those who really care. Sometimes we'll sigh, sometimes we'll cry, and we'll know why just you and I know true love ways. Sometimes we'll cry, and we'll know why just you and I know true love ways.
Ah, yeah. True Love Ways, good song, and he wrote that for his wife?
It was a poem she actually had written, Maria Elena.
Okay.
Had written that he turned into a song. Yeah.
Wow. Now, where was that? Was that, obviously, he got married late.
Yeah, well, 58,
so
like 6 months before he had passed.
Wow.
Yeah, they went to Acapulco for their honeymoon with Jerry Allison and Peggy Sue Guerin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue.
She was married to Jerry Allison for a while, the drummer.
Wow. Because they wrote the song.
Yeah, that's why they changed the name to Peggy Sue, yeah.
Wow, that's funny stuff. Tonight, you can see him. One final plug tonight. Tribute to Buddy Holly, Kenny James and the Rayvon Band. Friday tonight, September 6th, 7:30 p.m. at the Hobart Art Theater in the heart of downtown Hobart. And after that show, which will also feature the Spaniels Forever, so get there early, don't be tardy, After the show, we're all going to meet next door at my record store. We're going to have a little pizza party there with the band and hang out and get to talk to the guys and take pictures or whatever you want to do. And then tomorrow, we will be across the state line at the Acorn Theater, the beautiful and historic Acorn Theater. And it'll be all rave on. No opening acts, no special guests. It's going to be a night of Buddy Holly for the actual birthday party, which is tomorrow, which, of course, he would have turned 83 years old. So it's amazing to think he did all of this at 22 years of age before he passed.
It blows
my mind.
And, you know, I think it's easier to do that now with the technology mm-hmm. than it is back then. So, you know, you got to take that for into account, too. Things that they did were nobody did it before.
Right. They were leading the way, and they didn't have the technology. Like we were talking about the guitars. You know, a lot of people, for instance, to jump a decade ahead, a lot of people will say, oh, Hendrix, yeah, he was good. But, you know, my friend down the street, he can play Purple Haze just like Jimmy. Well, he's got 15 pedals.
Yeah.
Jimmy didn't have that. You know, you had basically your talent, your strings, and a knack for playing upside down.
And you started out playing for Little Richard.
And the Isleys.
And the Isleys, right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
As Jimmy James.
Yeah.
And then he did the Blue Flames. And then he had Randy California as a 16-year-old named Randy Wolf at the time, who broke off because he couldn't go to England with Hendrix because his dad, Ed Cassidy, and his stepmother, or his mom and his stepdad, Ed Cassidy, refused to let him go with this freaky guy at age 16 across the pond. So that's how the band Spirit formed.
This guy knows more about Hendrix than I do Buddy Holly.
More about Spirit than I do Hendrix, actually. But, yeah, good stuff. So any shout-outs to anyone? Let's give some quick shout-outs.
You know, it's been a rough couple weeks. My mom has been ill. She was in and out of the hospital. We've talked about that. Mm-hmm. She's home. She's doing well.
Good for that.
So prayers to my mom. Everybody out there, get your prayer chains going. And the guy who turned me on to Buddy Holly, you know, my dad, I've always told you this over years, my dad was a big influence.
And he's a player.
And one day we were coming home from down south, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, and my dad had this 8-track tape of Buddy Holly. I said, who's this? And he told me. I said, where'd you get that? I said, it belongs to your Uncle Daryl. And so we played it on the way home, and I said, Dad, can we keep it? Do we have to give it back to him? So my Uncle Daryl turned me on to Buddy Holly, and unfortunately he just passed away just a little over a week ago with a quick, short battle with cancer. And, and, you know, he went home about a week ago. So we're going to dedicate this weekend to my Uncle Daryl.
Excellent. Yeah. Good thing. Give a shout out to your pops too,
and my dad.
Because he's always at the shows.
Yeah, he's usually always there. He's
you can recognize him. He's a good looking guy with the pompadour. Still has all his hair. I'm so jealous. But good guy.
Yeah, good guy. And I'm not sure if he'll be there with my mom just being home and everything. But I hope so. I mean they're always there with me.
Mm-hmm.
Every show I do, everywhere I'm at. So
right. Okay, Dan, Rob, any shout-outs to folks?
Well, you know, it's just great to be back in the area. And, I know my dad's listening and my wife, Lynn. So they'll be at the show. My dad is going to be at the show tonight in Hobart,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be a big, big thrill for him. So.
Cool. We'll make sure to have him stand up and point out and take a bow.
Oh, yeah, you'll see him. I don't have anybody in particular. Just thank all the people that come out and do come out because it is a great show, high energy. You won't be disappointed. Every penny you pay for it will be worth it, and it'll be something you'll talk about and wish you brought more friends with you.
All right.
And like when we ever do a back-to-back show night after night, tonight, if you take tonight's ticket stub and come to tomorrow night's show, we'll make sure it gets thrown away for you.
All right. With that, let's close out with a song that was the first posthumous Buddy Holly single. This was the sequel song, the follow-up to Peggy Sue. This is Peggy Sue Got Married, released shortly after Buddy's plane crash. So we're going to leave you with this one. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you tonight at the Hobart Art Theater.
Somebody scream!
No, no, no. Don't say that I told you so. I just heard a rumor from a friend. I don't say that it's true. I'll just leave that up to you.